Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. Well, 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 welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend the hour with us, we are very, very, very glad to have you. One of the big things as a woman, I think, is absolutely imperative is to feel good, positive, and really, really healthy. And I think it's one of those things as we go through ages, whether or not it's you're in your 20s, whether you're in your 80s, that we feel good at all times. But one of the things I've been really intrigued about lately is what do women want at 50? And I've got a very special guest on tonight who we're going to be chatting about that. And I'm pretty excited about that. And just how, as we go through the ages, how things evolve. And what we need and what we want, how those things change and how we can make a difference that way by keeping everything really positive and wonderful. So joining me tonight is, and I'm going to, Dr. Regis, and she's completed her MA and her PhD in counseling psychology at the University of BC, and she's also a registered psychologist and a registered marriage and family therapist, and she counsels individuals and couples and families, and she has been since 1990. And she's also taught graduate courses in psychology and counseling at UBC and other academic institutions, and she's done a lot of pretty amazing things. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Carolyn.
Great
to be here.
Well, it's really great to have you, and I was really glad when my friend Melania had recommended you to us, so I'm pretty excited, and even more so since we had a chance to chat in our pre-show chat as well, because you've got quite a few really great things coming up. So did you want to mention a few of those to our listeners about, you're mentioning about Spain and teaching different workshops for couples and things in regards to, in terms of babies and things like that?
Sure. One of my biggest areas of passion, interest, and specialty has been the transition to parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see a lot of pregnant and postpartum women who are dealing with all kinds of challenges, like mood, anxiety, changes in relationship with their partners, just adjusting to their new role, which is many of them will tell you that has been the most challenging thing they've ever done, is having a baby and raising children. So I do have a workshop coming up it's called Partners to Parents, and
Partners to Parents.
It's for couples who are expecting their first baby, and it is focused on what to expect with regards to the relationship. So most of prenatal classes, for example, focus on preparing for the birth, the labor and birth.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little that focuses on the relationship, that the changes that the relationship is likely to go through when you have a baby.
Mm-hmm. And
this workshop actually focuses on that, and sharing some really important tips as to how to maintain a good relationship and a good loving relationship when you have a screaming baby at hand.
And I'm very curious, are there some tips that you can let our listeners know, just to give them a little few tidbits before the workshop?
Sure. I think that the number one thing would be to learn to listen to each other and to have non-defensive communication. So when your partner is coming up with a comment or even a complaint, it's very easy to go to a defensive mode and to say yes, but.
Mm-hmm.
And find reasons or excuses as to why your partner is not right or not doesn't have a good point or shouldn't be so hard on you. And I think that one of the most important things that couples need to learn is to listen with curiosity.
With curiosity.
And, yeah, rather than defensiveness, and to really try to understand where their partner is coming from and what they really want. And many times couples, when they try this kind of communication, find out that they're not that far off from each other, basically.
Hmm.
Yeah, and another interesting thing that's coming up is in the past maybe 8 years, there's been a new big conference on women's mental health. It's called the, World Congress on Women's Mental Health. The first one was in Berlin.
Wow.
And the second one was in Washington, D.C. And the next one is coming up in Madrid, Spain, in which I'm going to talk about different treatment options for pregnant women who have mood disorders, because pretty much what we see today in Canada and the United States is that the first line of defense is medication, whereas this population is highly sensitive and highly reluctant to take medication on the one hand, and on the other hand, there are so many very effective, well-researched, well-proven to be effective psychotherapies that women can engage in, and if we could keep medication for the most severe cases, that would be women are, and their babies are going to be better, much better off. And the point being that women need to know about all the options, and women, you know, information is power. And so rather than saying to a woman, you're depressed and you need to go on this medication, I would like the practice to be you're depressed, or it seems like you have symptoms of depression or anxiety. Here are your options. Let's explore them one by one and make a decision together. So this is what I'm going to be talking about, and I've developed a decision-making model with regards to the appropriate treatment plan for different types of problems for women.
What are some of the problems that come up that sometimes that you've got in your model?
Well, with pregnancy, a lot of what we see is anxiety, different types of anxiety. So women who will describe themselves as worry warts before the pregnancy, their anxiety sometimes gets heightened, and they worry about everything that has to be with the baby, with you know, is the pregnancy going well? Is everything going to be ready in time for the baby? If there is a problem in the relationship, they really worry about that and how that would play into having a new baby and the relationship. Some of them worry about the birth. Some women who've had a bad experience during first birth may be extremely anxious during the second pregnancy. And so we see a lot of anxiety problems. And also something that people don't expect is that some pregnant women get depressed. And many women themselves are quite surprised at that because most of them, even if they wanted the pregnancy and planned the pregnancy, and when they find themselves feeling down, having long crying spells, lack of motivation, lack of joy, they really can't understand where it's coming from, and they're very upset. I mean, depression is a very painful condition, and both emotionally, there's some physical symptoms. But to be pregnant and depressed, this is it almost sounds like an oxymoron. I mean, shouldn't you be happy?
No, there's hormones going all over the place.
Right.
So I can only imagine. I've had two of my dear friends who have one-year-olds now, but just watching the two of them go through just all the changes in the evolution, it was quite interesting. And one of them actually has been dealing with postpartum, so I've I've gotten to witness it on the just at the edge of the curtain, I guess, because I haven't gone there myself yet. So
yeah. Another thing that sometimes happens, and it's in most, it's more extreme and not as common, but it exists, is developing obsessive compulsive disorder during pregnancy. Mm. And these are the women who also may have had some tendency to be worriers, but now they're obsessed about all kinds of worries, or they develop some rituals that they have to perform. And one of the, you know, interesting things that I learned some time ago was that it was close to Christmas, and one of my clients brought me a bag of cookies that she's baked, and I thanked her, and I thought it was a very nice gesture. And then at the end of our session, we went to the waiting area where her husband was waiting. Mm. And I brought the cookies with me to share with the staff. And so the husband looked at me and said, oh, you got one of those too. And I kind of looked at him puzzled, and he said, did she tell you how many cookies she's baked? So this woman was baking and baking and baking and couldn't stop herself from baking cookies. And she baked hundreds of them.
Wow.
Because once she was stopping the baking, she got very anxious. So, and she was pregnant. So, yeah, it was part of her nesting instinct, but that has gone a bit too far.
Yes, it almost sounds a little bit, and forgive me because I'm not a psychologist myself, so I don't have the background, but would I be able to compare that to addiction in some way, shape, or form? In some ways, it just makes me think of overeating, for example, for in terms of just trying to weed off the anxiety, which sometimes once people stop, that's when everything just kind of mounts.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are similarities, you're right about that, and with OCD, it's the anxiety that goes higher and higher until the person performs their special ritual, at which point the anxiety goes down, only to go up again after a while, and that's why they have to repeat their rituals, whether it's washing hands or counting or checking or baking cookies.
Mm-hmm. And I can understand wanting to nest too, but I could see how that could go a little bit more extreme depending on how the person was feeling.
Yeah.
How does it affect after the baby is born with postpartum and then perhaps a few years later after menopause? Because I know we're talking about what do women want at 50?
Yeah.
And how, because I know you've just written an article about it, which is congratulations, it's exciting.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I think it's really neat because there doesn't seem to be a lot written about the topic. And one of the things that you brought up was just in terms of Sex and the City. It's, well, I thought it was neat because the character Samantha is in her 50s now, so it's quite exciting to see a sexy older woman. So,
Kim Cattrall, the actress, is actually 54. And she looks amazing, and she makes the point that she can be still sexual, even though in the second Sex in the City movie, she's going through perimenopause with all the hot flashes and so on and so forth. So one of the things. So what happened was that I was approaching my 50th birthday, and I was starting to. Sense a shift in my own thinking about life and about things that I wanted from life, and I was wondering if that was common or if I was going out of my mind, basically. So psychologists are, you know, the first to doubt their own sanity, right? So I started, but one thing to be told was that I did have a few of my clients who were telling me things that sounded very similar to what I was going through, and you know, sometimes I was looking at someone and listening to someone telling me my own story, kind of. And so I thought, okay, it's not just me; it's my clients. And then I started talking to friends, and friends of friends, and family of friends, and so on and so forth. And I started looking for literature on what women, the processes, the emotional processes and social processes of women in their 50s and early 60s. And I was quite amazed to find out that there was not a lot out there. There's barely anything. And so I thought, okay, it's not a scientific research project, but it's my own little survey that I did, and I ended up talking to over 50 women.
Wow, 50 women.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, 50 women in their 50s and early 60s. And because friends have heard about my survey, and they said, hey, just because we're over 60, don't exclude us, right? You know? We want to say our piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so these themes emerged from all the stories that I've heard.
And what were the main themes that you found? I know you documented some of them in the article, but I'd love to share them with the listeners.
Mm-hmm. So the first thing that came up and that almost all of the women mentioned was that there was a sense of, I don't want to waste any time on things that don't matter to me. And just like I felt like, you know how when you're young, everybody says, oh, you have your whole life ahead of you. And then you kind of internalize this message, and you think that for quite some time. In your 20s, maybe early 30s, you still say, oh, I have my whole life ahead of me. When you hit 50, you realize that, no, it's not your whole life is ahead of you. Some life, hopefully, is ahead of you. But you have to kind of make it count. You have to make every day and every year count.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you want something to change in your life, you can't wait for it to change. You have to make it happen. So I found that women were taking more initiative to achieve all kinds of goals that they've set out for themselves, and just focusing their time on things that matter to them, that they thought they were passionate about, they thought that it was important to them to make sure that they reach certain goals, that they do certain things, experience certain things, and not just wait for it to maybe happen and maybe not happen.
And I just wish that all of us could do that.
Yeah, and some of them were saying that actually they kind of felt that even before 50, but that when they turned 50, they realized that, you know, it's now or never, kind of, or you know, it's not that we're old, but we still have our energy, we still have our wherewithal, and we better get on with it.
And do you think it's an age thing, or is it a confidence thing, where they've accepted themselves as who they are? As I was mentioning in our pre-show chat, I know from 19 to once I hit 30, I found that I felt a lot more confident in my 30s than I did in my late teens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious in terms of if part of that evolution and making every moment count is partly because of that, and also because we value ourselves more at 50, perhaps.
Definitely value, self-value, and I would say confidence is true. But also clarity.
Clarity, okay.
I think that most women talked about clarity as one of the big things that they have been able to develop. And I think that a few things coincide at around 50 for women. So, for example, most women at 50 or 50 plus have finished kind of the main chunk of raising their kids if they've had them.
Yeah.
And so they have less responsibilities in caring for others in the family. And at the same time, many of them are going through perimenopause. And so the signs of aging are coming upon them. And feeling changes in your body and changes in how you experience yourself, I think also contributes to changes in how you perceive things and how you think about your life. Because it's kind of time to reevaluate.
Okay, and reflect and make
reflect
those changes.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly, yeah. And another thing that I found was that women talked about their relationships, and they were not interested anymore in unfulfilling, shallow type relationships, and those relationships that you have just because you know, you have to, and you're part of a social group or whatnot. They tended to put a lot more energy and focus on relationships that were meaningful to them. And so they were talking about friendships and also talking
romantic
about spousal relationships, which was very, very interesting. Because with girlfriends, one of the things that women at 50, and probably earlier as well, but at 50, some of them were saying, you know, girl power, you know. we finished or we're almost through with raising our kids. we can now focus on ourselves and on each other, actually. Mm-hmm. And some of them were going through some rough things, like health-wise. I had a couple of women who have gone through cancer treatment, and some were losing parents, and even a husband, and the kind of relationships that they sought after were the kind that where you can be yourself, you can be, you don't have to pretend, you don't have to have the relationship just because it's expected of you, but rather because you really are getting something from this relationship, and it's meaningful to you.
So it's more truthful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And saying
we're tired of playing games. We're tired of pretending.
Mm-hmm.
We're tired of going places and doing things just because it's expected and it's the appropriate thing to do.
So really, by having that clarity in terms of knowing what they want, it's easier to actually have that happen within their relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the social ones, as you're mentioning, mm-hmm. instead of being just nice to people because they're in the group,
mm-hmm.
Being able to actually do, I guess, breakups in terms of that, which I've always found female friendship breakups are challenging. So, where it's almost like I always seem to expect them to last forever. So it's interesting with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas romantic ones,
yeah,
either way.
With romantic ones, it's also interesting because that interest actually came for me from a few clients of mine who were in their 50s, and some of them were coming on their own. Just to process their own feelings about their marriage. Others were coming with their spouses in an attempt to fix the marriage, to work on the marriage and to address their dissatisfaction with the marriage. And mm-hmm. Most of them said the same thing, which was, you know, up until now we were so busy taking care of the kids that we kind of accepted whatever. We were dissatisfied or unhappy to some extent, but we kind of let it go because we're so busy being focused on the kids. But now that the kids have left, and I've had quite a few of them where the kids were first year in university, first time out of the house,
mm-hmm.
and now we have the time to look at our relationship and to either work on it or see if it can be even made to be better and satisfactory, and if not, then a breakup is quite likely.
Wow, that's really neat in terms of. And do you find a lot of them are obviously they accept if it's not going to work, okay, let's stop trying to make it work, but really taking that time. In terms of, and I'm going to go full circle here, in regards to the course that you teach in terms of couples that are expecting,
mm-hmm.
is there some things that in terms of educating the couple in terms of keeping themselves still there that perhaps if these people learn it now and by the time they're 50, perhaps the expectations might be different if you're doing a paper on those people then?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's an excellent question, Caroline, and I'm glad you asked her. I think that the main thing is to not forget to be a couple,
mm-hmm.
and it's so easy to put your coupleship or couplehood on the back burner when you have kids, because they do consume all of your time and energy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the couples who are doing well or who are doing better than other couples are the ones who have kept their relationship. They've kept a special place for their relationship. They've not neglected their relationship as a couple. They've kept having dates, having holidays, just the two of them, going out for walks, just the two of them. And you know, I understand that when you have little kids or babies, it's very challenging to find time to do that. But I tell my couples, you know, just have 10 minutes of holding hands and looking each other in the eye, you know, every day. That's not too much to ask, and that's not, it doesn't cost you any money. And, you know, one of the things that I say, your relationship is your best and most precious family asset. And you know, if you nurture your relationship, this is the greatest asset that you're going to have for you and for your kids, because kids thrive when marriages thrive.
When are you teaching that course?
You'd have to ask Melania, but I'm pretty sure we're doing one in November.
Okay.
So it's going to be on my website.
Do you want to just plug your website really quickly in case some of our listeners might be wanting to look, because we're all multitaskers these days, so
sure.
That way they can check it while they're listening as well. What is your website address again?
So it's www.drregev, as in Victor.com. So short for Dr. Regev in one word.
I like that. No, I think you'll probably have a lot of people who are very curious about that. So, and it's interesting because I've had a few guests on the show where that's one of the questions I've been curious about is how do you make that transition from going from a couple where it's just me and you equals us to me, you plus baby equals us, where it's not a couple anymore. So,
right. And a lot of things can happen in terms of how the relationship changes. I mean, a lot of couples will tell you that having a baby has made them very much closer have a real sense of family rather than just being a couple. They now feel like a family. But even the strongest relationship are strained somewhat because of the baby. And I just had someone in my office the other day where the mother was so invested in the baby that she completely almost ignored the father. The father felt so marginalized and so out of the loop. He was very, very, you know, sad to see, well, happy to see the relationship between the mother and the baby being so strong and the bond there, but sad about himself being an outsider to that relationship. So, you know, in other relationships, the father feels like, well, I'm the breadwinner. I'm going to work, and it's her job to take care of the kids and to take care of the house. And it's not really my, you know, my role. Or so kind of a traditional way of looking at things, and which you find less and less, I have to say, that more fathers these days are interested in getting involved, but not always have the time because of work constraints and or have the opportunity, because moms many times won't let the father do as much, or make comments about how they do things with the baby, which may be different than the way they're doing things with the baby or for the baby. And then the dads are kind of, well, you know, I must not be as good as she is in whatever, taking care of the baby, and so I might as well not try.
Wow.
Which, of course, is, you know...
creates more issues.
Everybody loses out.
They do. You know? So basically, as women, I guess we have to create a way where men don't feel shame in terms of that, where they're encouraged and just helping them grow so that they feel comfortable and not making them feel like they're the odd man out.
Right, and understanding that there is more than one way of doing things for your baby or kids. And, you know, you'll have your own way of doing things. And, of course, if you're breastfeeding, for example, your husband can't breastfeed, but he can do everything else, even if he does it in a different way than you do. It's still good enough.
So basically trying to take the judgment out and the ego out of everything and just really focusing on what's really happening was the fact that both of you love the baby and love each other, and just trying to foster that. When you did the survey with the women over like 50, at 50 and above, did you notice a difference in terms of, and I don't know if this came up a lot, in terms of with the question about the relationship and also the fact that they also want to feel attractive and desirable, that the couples that actually did actually make the time to take care of their coupleness, or the coupledom, as you described it. Were those ones, did they seem to be happier in general at this stage?
Well, a few interesting things came up. One of them was that women wanted to feel attractive, wanted to feel sexy, wanted to feel desirable, at the same time as they were sometimes battling perimenopausal symptoms, which actually are telling them that they're getting older. And so this is quite a discouraging thing that happens to women at 50. And at the same time, when they're freer in terms of their duties and responsibility with children, they kind of sometimes find or refine their sexuality. And so it's a little bit of a conflict there. And one of the things that came up was that women who were sexually involved with either their husband or a partner regularly sexually involved felt more attractive no matter what their body shape or type was, or whether they were overweight or not, than women who were not involved sexually with a partner, even if they looked like Kim Cattrall.
That's interesting. And I totally buy that, too, because I think in terms of relationships and as human beings, I think touch is so imperative, because they've got studies where if babies aren't touched that they'll die. On the opposite end of the spectrum, I've heard studies, and I don't know if this is true or not, because I can't quote one off the top of my head, but that that happily married couples tend to live longer, just in general. And I honestly think it is because of the human connection.
Well, there's an interesting, the interesting finding about that is that men tend to live longer in happily married, happily married couples. It is more significant for the longevity of men than women.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, so, so working and investing in your relationship with your woman is kind of a life insurance.
To tell all men that, Cheryl, even the ones that are commitment phobic, it's just like if you spend that time and invest in a good woman that loves you back and that you love, it can save your life, and you can have a happy, prosperous life in the things that matter the most, which usually is health, which I think that's great that that's also on the list in terms of things that the women wanted, was having, being healthy. For women over 50. I tend to circle conversations.
Yeah, no, that was a really a neat thing that came up, because with the symptoms of perimenopause, and, you know, different women get symptoms at different ages, but around 50, most women will have experienced some symptoms, and not every woman has horrible symptoms, but most women will have some symptoms. Like vaginal dryness, loss of libido or decreased libido, night sweats and heat, hot flashes, fogginess of thought, and these are the main ones. But and of course, irregular periods. So, you know, it makes you have to pay attention to your body when you start getting those symptoms, even if you were, you know, for 20 years invested in taking care of your kids and running to the doctor for every little thing that was wrong with your kid and never putting yourself on the list and never checking yourself. When you're starting to have those symptoms, it's kind of your body saying, hey, pay attention to me, too. And so women do see their doctors more often, and then many of them actually started exercising more regularly, engaging in all kinds of physical activity like yoga, hiring a personal trainer, things that they didn't have time or money for in the past, and now they were feeling like, okay, I have to do something. I have to lose weight because, you know, this can't go on like this. Or, you know, maybe they found out that they have high levels of insulin or high blood pressure. And so, okay, I can't ignore my body any longer. I have to do something about it. And then they say, okay, we want to be healthy. We want to age healthfully. And so also putting more emphasis on eating right and choosing better in terms of what they put in their mouths. And again, it ties in with time and money, because when you don't have to run around shuffling kids here and there and making dinners for the family, but you can focus on yourself, and then you can stop and say, hey, I don't need this bag of chips. I can make myself a salad. Or, you know, if you want to be you want to buy organic produce or meat, maybe 50-year-olds can afford it more than 25-year-olds or 35-year-olds. That's an overgeneralization.
I think it depends on what's important, and I'm just going to ask if you'd recommend this for our listeners, what I usually try and recommend just in general. And it's funny, even earlier this evening when I was actually doing the volunteer orientation for the charity work that I do, separate of the radio show, I was actually telling the medical students that we are training that I really encourage people for their birthdays every year to actually go for a complete physical and book it on your birthday, because it's the best gift you can give yourself. And I don't know if we started doing that now, if perhaps, I'd just be really curious if we started taking note of what the women are saying and actually looking at where we're at right now, regardless whether you're 19 years old, whether you're 30, or even if you're in your mid-40s and making some changes, so that perhaps, I'm just curious because I'd love to see you do another survey in 10 years and see what the results are, if they're different at all.
Right. I personally prefer a day at the spa for my birthday than at my doctor's waiting room, but maybe a day after my birthday or their birthday. It's a good idea to go and do a checkup and a physical, but also just to adopt a healthier lifestyle where you exercise regularly, of course, and you choose healthier food most of the time, we like to say, because, you know, who doesn't want to indulge from time to time? We have to be realistic about it. But also do things like, you know, don't wait until you fall apart and collapse to take care of yourself in other ways, like having breaks, doing something that recharges you with energy, especially if you're a young woman caring for children. You tend to give and until you run on empty, and then it will affect your health eventually, whether it's your physical health, your mental health. You have to take care of yourself. And what I the example that I give my clients, and they seem to like, is that when you go on a flight, they show you a video about should the oxygen level in the cabin drop, that the masks are going to drop from above, and you have to put one on yourself before you can help others. And what I say to my women is, you know, put the oxygen mask on yourself, because the oxygen level has dropped in the cabin, which means there's more stress, there's more stuff to do, there's less time to do it. You have to take care of yourself in order to be able to take care of others.
That's so true. And I think everybody can take note of that, because that's absolutely imperative.
And mothers seem to be the hardest population to actually buy into that.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think we all want to be superwoman, even in this day and age? I know in the 80s it was very popular, but I don't think we've completely let go of that as women. Is it because men expect us to do it, or we expect ourselves, or The media, what do you think it is that makes us think that we have to do everything and then we blame ourselves when we can't?
I think that, I don't think it's either men or women. Mm. I think it's society in general expect mothers in particular to be all giving and selfless and sacrifice willingly for their kids and enjoy it and be happy all the time. You know, that's a part of the myth of motherhood. And, you know, I did my doctorate on the experience of postpartum depression. That was about 10 years ago, and I researched the myth of motherhood and how much it was alive, still alive then, 10 years ago. I'm sure it's still alive now, where women feel that they have to be perfect, they have to be super moms, they have to be giving, selflessly and endlessly. Otherwise, they are not doing their jobs right. Where the truth is that, look at your child, and if they're thriving, they're happy, they look good, they gain weight, then you're doing your job right. You don't have to, run yourself so amok or so thin that you're going to fall apart. One of the first things that I teach my clients who are postpartum is you have to stop to take care of yourself. Otherwise, you're going to be good for nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that that women have bought into this myth of motherhood, and so there's kind of a quiet conspiracy of women not actually sharing that much their difficulties, their challenges, and putting on appearances that everything is perfect and I'm doing so well and I'm on top of things, where actually they're feeling deep down inside, they're feeling overwhelmed, exhausted, self-doubting, and just wanting a break and not allowing themselves a break. And, to that effect, I can tell you that I've heard from many women who have little kids who wished upon themselves to be sick enough to be hospitalized, but not sick enough to be seriously sick and die, because all they wanted was a break. And to be taken care of. And, God, we don't need to go that far, do we?
No, but I think our society's like that. And I was hoping last year with the whole swine flu thing that, because all of a sudden offices were actually encouraging people, if you're feeling sick, you're coughing, you stay home. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time in a really long time. And I was hoping that hopefully would be a change in terms of the fabric of our society, that mm-hmm. we'd finally, when people actually were sick, actually let them be sick. And even then, where I honestly think there is something to be said about mental health days, where I think we do need to take them sometimes, because by taking those small breaks mm-hmm. and being able to build those breaks into our days, especially in our fast food culture, I think it's absolutely imperative that we do that.
Mm-hmm. And the way I like to put it is, take breaks so you don't break.
I may have to quote you on that. That's a really good one.
Feel free.
Take breaks so you won't break. And I think it's key, because if we don't take care of us, we have nothing to give.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting as well, going full circle again back to what women over 50 want, was the one point in regards to that freedom came up so much. Mm. And I think in terms of, if, as you're mentioning with parenting, a lot of times there's a lot of sacrificing, etc. But it's interesting that came up quite a bit, because I hear that sometimes now, and it's just like, what is the definition of freedom?
Mm-hmm. And for the women in my little survey, mm-hmm. It was basically doing what you want to do rather than what you have to do.
Wow.
And one of them told me very proudly that she went to Italy for 3 months and to learn Italian, which had been a lifelong dream of hers. Which she had thought that she would never fulfill, mm-hmm. and that for her 50th birthday, I believe her husband said, "Why don't you do that? You've always wanted to do that." But her mother said something like, what's this nonsense? You're a married woman. Why go to Italy on your own for 3 months? And that's just a waste of time and money and so on. And she said, you know what? I looked at my mom and I said, you know what? I am 50 and I can decide. And this is what I want to do, even if you don't like it. And she said it was such a sense of freedom to finally do what I wanted to do, even though somebody disapproved and somebody important like her mom.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's the first time she felt like,
wow,
yeah, I can do it even though somebody close to me doesn't approve.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another thing was, you know, a mom of three who told me that all her life she was doing things that she had to do, like driving the kids here and there, entertaining her husband's guests, and attending all kinds of charity functions that she, you know, wasn't really into but had to, mm-hmm. felt like she had to attend. And she said, you know, there came a point when I was, for her it was 55,
mm-hmm.
that I said to myself, I don't have to go to all those places. I don't have to do all these things anymore. I can choose which functions to attend. I can choose which guests to entertain and which guests to say to my husband, take them to a restaurant. And it was a great sense of freedom for her.
I think that's awesome. What would you like to see in terms of if we could basically go into the Vancouver School Board system and teach a few things to the young ladies and men there so that at 50, if you're doing this survey, and at when they turn 50, let's just say a 10-year-old girl, what were some of the things you'd like to implement so that perhaps the results might change?
Oh, that's a great question. I have to say that I would have to think about it
okay.
a bit more. But, you know, one thing that kind of comes to me is I think teaching kids about choices and about being true to their own heart desires is not to train them to be selfish as much as to be really true to themselves. And I think it has to also do with peer pressure and what you do because everybody else does, even though you don't really, your heart is not really into it. Rather than that, explore what you really, what your heart desire is or what your passion is, what's really interesting to you, and follow that.
I think that'd be really lovely. And what would you like to educate the parents? Because you're already doing that, which I think is great in terms of basically embracing coupledom as well and in terms of teaching them once they've expected a child. And what are some of the things as parents that they should be teaching their kids so then that way when their children turn 50, that they should be happy and or at least more content or change the results a little bit?
Mm.
I'm thinking of the freedom question in particular, but...
Yeah, I think that maybe having some freedom within your responsibilities.
Mm.
I think we all have a lot of responsibilities, and we have a lot of things kind of decided for us, being mm-hmm. decided for us by school, by teachers, by parents. I would like to see more, again, it's more training kids to think for themselves, to choose from different options, to persevere in what they've chosen, and also to, I think we talk a lot about being a well-rounded person mm-hmm. and a well-rounded kid, and I think it's so important that kids pursue their interests and also do stuff that is really fun for them. And so when they learn at a very young age what they like to do, if they can combine, for example, a type of exercising that they like, they're more likely to maintain that as they grow up. And,
mm-hmm.
and to, so for example, if they like swimming, that's great. If they like, if you know, at some point they learn tennis or golf or something that they can take with them into adulthood and sustain it, and feel free to choose what they want and not necessarily what is being dictated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was three, my mother actually asked me to choose my own clothes, and I think that that was excellent training for me to not be handed over everything, but to actually
make a choice.
Think about, okay, these are my options. What would I like to choose? Because many times parents tend to decide for kids because it's easier, because it's quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But then comes a time when the child doesn't know what to choose. For example, for an extracurricular activity, and the parents will say, well, can't you choose? Why don't you choose? Because they don't know how to.
Because they've never been given the opportunity to make choices.
Right.
So what I'm hearing is not only encouraging the children to choose, but actually creating a strong structure so there are guidelines they can make choices within that, so it's still safe, but yet at the same
time,
the parents can trust them enough.
Of course, you give them choices. Which are age appropriate. You don't ask a child, what would you like to eat at the age of two or three? You ask them, would you like to eat the chicken and peas, or would you like the pork and the carrots? Or, you know, you get the picture. So choices within reason and age appropriate choices.
Mm-hmm.
And as they grow up, giving them more choices and more variety and more areas of their life so that they know to choose.
What would you like to see in 100 years from now in terms of if we were doing an interview and it was asking, or a survey rather, and it was asking 50 women who are 50 or and above what they want, what do you think we'd get?
Well, I hope they would feel free much earlier than at 50.
I do too. I just hope that's possible just in this. I really think of it as a fast food culture. I love Twitter, I love Facebook and all those things, but I really do feel that in a lot of ways we're really on a lot more than I think perhaps we have been in the past. I know my boyfriend and I were actually just chatting about it on the way out to the station tonight, where we're chatting about the fact that I find on our downtime we actually do turn off our cell phones and turn off the internet and actually spend time together, which actually I really enjoy. And I just worry sometimes as we evolve that, and as we get more and more plugged in, that I hope we value those times.
Right, and really human connection. It's really important to have face-to-face, skin-to-skin, rather than all electronic communication all the time. But I wanted to, if I may, just add one more little thing that I would like to see is, especially for women, accepting themselves the way they are and accepting imperfection, because I see in a lot of women a lot of perfectionism and guilt feelings for not being perfect, because if you expect yourself to be perfect, then you're setting yourself up for failure, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So, and especially for mothers, this is my main message, is that you don't have to be perfect to be a good mother.
I may need to quote you on that. I think that's fantastic. Thank you.
Again, my pleasure.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure, speaking of pleasure, to have you on the show. And what is next for you? Because I know you've got the workshop coming up. And do you have an email list or anything, so if people go to your website that they can sign up so they can find out about more information, or if they want to book you for a session or anything like that?
Well, session booking is done through my website. Has
your contact information?
My contact, my email, and so on.
Okay.
But people can also go onto my blog, and there's lots of stuff there. Articles that I've written, publications, interviews on TV that I've had, and so on. And I just write there from time to time. I write about current issues and my thoughts about those. So they can
subscribe to your blog?
I think they have to go through my website.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, my website, www.erregev.com.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Caroline.
You're welcome. Well, up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the week.